Americans are uniting now in democratic ways to solve some of their everyday problems. These stories are transcribed and produced by NBC's special program unit, Living 1951. We have entitled this, our 10th program, The City That Refused to Die. Your narrator, Ben Grauer.
Greetings, America. In northern Alabama, rural Alabama, where the farm bell still calls the farmer from the fields, and the sound of chicks is like new music to the ears, we found a story to make free men take heart and recorded its cast of characters on the very spot, recordings you will shortly hear. But first, a word from our field reporter, Elmore McKee.
In Decatur, three spirit fires of freedom and democracy are burning. Initiative, responsibility, teamwork, on the part of individuals, of groups, and of the community as a whole. It was not so yesterday. It is so today. And because it is so, a city that was dead has come alive. That you may see for yourself what these fires have wrought, I invite you to listen to a true story of creative, living democracy.
Decatur's story, America, belongs first to Decatur. Therefore, picture a man from Decatur telling it to you. Picture, if you will, a newspaper editor. Someone to whom Decatur is more than home, to whom Decatur is life itself.
Let me tell you about my town, Decatur. A town that came from nothing to something in 20 years. Reason is, it proves again the only magic wand in life is people. People are determined to... Well, there I go again, getting ahead of myself. Well, our story begins in 1931, when we were dependent, 2,000 of us, on the L&N Railroad shops. That's the Louisville and Nashville. And the zero hour, well, I was having coffee with the boys across the street in Charlie's Cafe when...
Hey, boss, we've been looking all over for you.
What's wrong, son?
Yeah, the L&N.
What about the L&N?
We just got word. They're going. They're closing shop. They're leaving town. We're ruined, boss. We'll be flatter than one of Charlie's pancakes.
Oh, believe it.
Excuse me, boys. Looks like I got to revise our obituary column. You know what it means to lose the one major industry that you've got? To see seven of the eight banks in your county close down? And cotton. Cotton, the only crop that you have. Cotton, which isn't cotton at all, but really bread and butter, sell for 5 cents a pound?
We asked the people about that, America. And the publisher of the Decatur Daily, Barrett Shelton, recorded this answer for us.
This is the truth, so help me. There was a time when I was ashamed to walk down the streets of Decatur because there were patches in my pants.
Yes, sir. We were so broke our land sold for taxes. Stores became vacant by the block. Our streets were turned into soup kitchens, and people paid for our newspaper with sorghum molasses. As for life on the farm...
Listen to Maynard Lehman of the Daily, who well remembers those days.
A friend of mine drove me through the countryside. Instead of seeing any livestock on the farms, all you'd see was hound dogs on the front porch.
Hound dogs in the country, and in the country and the towns, malaria. Do you know what you want to do when you have malaria? Nothing. And that's just what we did. Folks left town like people deserting a sinking ship. Those of us that stayed on were not only ill-housed and ill-fed, but worst of all, ill of hopelessness. Then one day, a visitor came to town. Now that cheering you hear is the way people cheered the day Franklin Delano Roosevelt came to town from visiting Muscle Shoals. It was January 33. He wasn't president yet, just president-elect. Well, we crowded the station and watched him shuffle out.
Hey, look. There he is.
We grew silent when we saw how it was with him. But, brother, when he stuck his chin out and talked, that was something else again.
I am tremendously impressed with this wonderful Tennessee Valley. I'm glad to have seen Muscle Shoals with my own eyes. With the help of Congress, we are going to put Muscle Shoals and the Tennessee Valley back on the map of the United States.
There was many a pair of patched pants in that crowd, but that speech did something to us. It lifted us up. Still, when the TVA, with dams for flood control, better navigation, cheap power, disease control, and all that was passed later, guess what we said, loafing on our empty street corners?
TVA, if that's all Washington do for us, they can just keep it. Who wants the government bossing us around?
Not for me, friend. Not as long as I can dig ditches for a living.
Do you know who was most set against it? That's right, me. But we were broke enough not to leave any stone unturned, so when we heard the head of TVA was on a tour of the valley and stopping at the Lions Hotel, we hustled ourselves up there.
Well, sir, I guess it's no news to you that we're mighty bad off here.
No, it isn't.
Now, we didn't invite you here to Decatur, but you're here. You're in command, so...
Yeah. Now, what are you going to do?
Me? I'm not going to do anything.
What do you mean you ain't going to do anything?
Gentlemen... All TVA will do is provide you with tools of opportunity. If anything else is going to be done about Decatur, you're going to do it.
Tools of opportunity. That was like throwing a drowning man a couple of matchsticks. Well, since it looked like no one was going to give us a handout... We could no longer subsidize northern industries to come south. We went ahead on our own. We got our Chamber of Commerce going again, even though there wasn't any commerce. And we invited a famous agriculturist to tell us how he taught a neighbor in town how to live on a farm instead of starving in a village.
Friends, I'm delighted for this opportunity to be with you. I should like tonight to talk of processing plants, phosphates for soil, and Lespedeza clover. Now, this clover is next to the
Lespedeza clover.
Lespedeza clover to hold the soil, when what we needed was to hold our body and soul together. Once again, our hopes fell to the floor. But this agriculturist did start some of us thinking about somebody that we'd forgotten for a long time, the farmer. So I guess it was me that suggested that we go to Moultrie.
Moultrie?
Yes, in South Georgia.
Why send a delegation to that town?
To see what they did as a community to pull themselves out of the ditch without hollering for outside help the way we've been in the habit of doing here in Decatur.
What do you mean?
Boys, you know the times long since passed when we could try to persuade northern industries to come south to help us out.
Well...
Remember, Sam, Moultrie's where the boll weevil ruined their agriculture. They had to eliminate cotton...
Yeah, but what have boll weevils and cotton got to do with the prosperity of Decatur, Alabama?
Help yourselves to the cigars, gentlemen.
Oh, thank you. Thank
well, now, as I was saying, when the boll weevil finished with us, we were almost finished.
Well, what'd you do?
Yeah. Well,
tell us about it, Mr. Abernathy.
Well, we bankers got together with other businessmen. And when a farmer came in for a loan to plant more cotton, we said, now, look, we're not trying to tell you what to grow. But if you intend to plant cotton, we're not going to loan you any money.
Well, what did you loan him money to plant?
Peanuts, gentlemen.
Peanuts?
Peanuts to fatten hogs. Then we started a packing plant to process those hogs. And pretty soon we had so much business, the meat packing companies took over. And now, instead of worrying about cotton and the boll weevil, gentlemen, like you do, we have the soundest economy in these parts.
We came back to Decatur all head up to do the same thing the man told us about in Moultrie. We decided we'd have to start things moving, start something new right here in Decatur. But if we were going to ask a farmer to raise hogs, we'd have to tell him a place where he could sell them. So first off, we went to Ice Plant in Decatur.
In no time, you can hardly pass the store these days without seeing an electric refrigerator in the window.
Is that so?
That's so.
Time's coming when you aren't going to be selling folks as much ice as you used to.
Is that true?
It sure is, Tom. Say, you fellas ever considered starting a packing plant?
As a matter of fact, they hadn't. But when we showed them the facts and figures, they said they would. So here we were with a packing plant ready to set up with nothing to pack. Now, we had to sell the farmer, so we got ourselves a slogan.
A cash market every day in the year for every product grown in the Decatur area.
And off we went to show the farmer the promised land. Four of us, one rainy night, dragged Harry Wiggin, our extension service man, out to address a meeting of farmers that we called at the Winton Schoolhouse. I don't know what the mix-up was, but when we got to the school, the place was black as pitch. Not a soul was there. So we sat around to wait. After a while, Charlie got nervous.
How long we been waiting?
About an hour and a half.
Nobody's coming, that's sure.
Gentlemen, I don't know about you, but I came here to make a speech, and by Godfrey, I'm going to make it.
Harry, do you have to?
Ladies and gentlemen, on this chart I have mounted on the wall here... Good Lord, don't tell me it's going to rain.
Yes, it was a sad start, all right. But one after another, the farmer, seeing the necessity of a change, took us up.
Okay, I'll get me a sow.
And soon that sow presented him with a litter of pigs. Pigs with a cash market indicator that he didn't have before. Well, sir, we went into the packing business without any hogs. And it wasn't long before we went into the milk business without any cow.
Now, you take Middle Tennessee.
And what about Middle Tennessee?
Well, all during the Depression, they had cars and clothes. What did we have?
Holes in our shoes, patches in our pants.
That's right. You want to know why they did so well?
Why?
Because they saw to it that the farmer got a paycheck every 2 weeks instead of just once a year, like with cotton.
Well, what worked that miracle, Sam?
Cows, milk. They're making money selling to the big milk companies.
So naturally, we went to one of the big milk companies.
How many cows do you have, gentlemen?
Cows?
Well, none to speak of yet. You mean to say you have no substantial milk production?
Well,
really, gentlemen, come back and see us when you've something to talk about.
But we never did go back to see that man. We never asked again for outside help. No, sir, we built our own dairy business. Started it by opening a cheese plant by public subscription. And our farmers didn't need a college education to figure out...
That's a funny thing. I never thought I'd live to see a gallon of milk a day equal the sale of a bale of cotton.
Now, don't forget... All this time, the TVA was taking shape. Now we could see the dam, see the lakes. Already, it was fighting malaria for us and teaching the farmer about renewing his soil with clover. And when the river was fixed for navigation, it was enough to make a grain plant come to Decatur. And that wasn't all. The grain people taught our farmers to grow hybrid corn to supply them with grain. But probably our best idea is the one that makes music like this.
Those chicks, America, belong to Farmer Kilpatrick. But better than any description of how Decatur organized a poultry processing plant and interested farmers in chickens as a sideline are the words Farmer Kilpatrick and his family recorded for us right on his farm.
Last year, I had 10 acres of cotton in, and I just got 3 bales of cotton on account of the boll weevils. And I switched from the cotton to raising chickens.
And with chickens substituting for cotton, what does Farmer Kilpatrick notice now?
It takes 12 months to raise cotton to get one chick out of your cotton crop. 10 weeks, you get a chick raising chickens for 10 weeks.
More checks, more money for chicken farmer Kilpatrick. But what pleases him almost as much as the checks is this added dividend.
If company comes in it, at mealtime, we can just go and get us a good fat chicken, have a good old fried chicken supper or lunch.
And if you think Farmer Kilpatrick is happy with the prospect of chewing on chicken legs, be sure, as we did, to talk to his wife, who waited 31 years for the electricity TVA finally brought her.
Before we had electricity, I raised 3 children. And I did my work in the house and then went to the field and helped with the labor in the field. And did my washing, rubbed my clothes on the rub board, just the old-time scrubby way on the rub board.
But those days are gone forever, thanks to wonderful electricity.
It really has been a lifesaver to me. I think my health would have been a lot better than it is now. I think I would have lived. I wrote and told my son, I think I would have lived 20 years longer if we'd had electricity.
Electrical magic to add a million unseen hands around her kitchen, as it does now.
The refrigerator, it really has meant something to us. We milk two cows, and it has really meant something to us to care for our milk and butter for our family. And the lights, it really has meant something to us. We're so not used to them, though sometimes we forget them.
But the special pride of the Kilpatricks is the water pump. And with the gurgling of the precious water in the background, we had our final word with daughter Ima.
Electricity has meant a lot to me. Life was dull before we had electricity. And sometimes I think if we didn't have electricity, I could hardly get along. And I don't believe I could ever go back to the old days of kerosene lamps and toting water from the well.
That's the way it is in Decatur today. We've got ourselves what the textbooks call diversified agriculture. King Cotton sort of lost his throne, and we've done it by simply using our own brains and the tools at hand.
Mac, Mr. L.G. MacDonald, who teaches vocational agriculture in Eva High School, happily endorses that statement as he trains the younger generation and takes advantage of these newly created markets.
We usually try to adapt the motto of learn to do by doing. Some known educator has said that a person usually forgets 7/8 of what he reads, 5/8 of what he hears, 3/8 of what he sees, and 1/8 of what he does.
So, to teach by doing, Mac takes his boys out of the classroom and into the field, proud of the fact that today,
almost all of my boys are members of the Future Farmers of America.
So Mac works with the young men of his neighborhood. Working with farm wives in nearby Oakdale is pretty Claudessa Norton, who recorded for us the most significant change of all.
When the families in the community were dependent on cotton as the one cash crop, it was all each family could do to look after its own affairs. It was each family for itself. Then, as the type of farming changed, the families began to work together. We understand each other's problems, and we're working together as a group instead of as individuals.
Yes, we've come a long way in Decatur since the time we walked down Main Street with our pants patched and our spirits low. And those changes that we've seen on our farms, we've seen the same thing happen with our industries, too. Today, we got us over 68 different plants making everything from nylon hose to ships, handing out paychecks every week to over 7,000 of us. But I guess the thing that really perks us up the most is what we did about our schools.
I tell you, gentlemen, our schools are a mess. They're falling apart. Why, they're so gloomy on a rainy day you can't hold classes in them.
That's what the new go-getting superintendent we hired told us. We scratched our head and rubbed our chins and asked him,
what can we do about them?
Raise new taxes, that's what. Taxes earmarked for schools only. Get more teachers, pay them more, teach new subjects. Build better buildings.
But will the people vote new taxes?
Gentlemen, I propose that you get the taxes. Let me worry about all the rest.
That's exactly what we did. We got the new tax set up, ready for a vote. And you know what that man did? The school band had just won the state contest in Birmingham. Well, sir, he lined up every student, every teacher, every principal and every school child behind that band and paraded them through town. They carried slogans like, Daddy, don't relax, vote for the tax, and what are you going to do for me? And the result? Well, I wish you'd ask just anybody what that parade of kids did to them.
We did, America, and these are the answers we recorded.
I'm telling you, when that parade went by, my wife turned to me and said, Honey, I don't care how you feel, but tomorrow you go in with me and vote for that school. And boy, I did.
And Shelton?
After seeing that parade, only a man with a heart of stone could have voted against that school tax.
Yeah. Professor. That's the story. Our farms are prospering, our industry is thriving, and our coming generation is well-schooled and happy. But we're not so pleased with ourselves that we don't think we can improve. I guess the way most of us see it is the way the publisher of our newspaper, the Decatur Daily, sees it, Barrett Shelton.
I think we are just at the beginning of the whole story. The very fact that we understand our weaknesses and that we realize our imperfections and are not content is the very key to the progress we are so sure we'll have in the future.
Decatur, the city that refused to die, lives. And our field reporter, Elmore McKee, who was there, reminds us,
Decatur proves what the people of a free community can do, even when everyone seems ready to write off their town as dead. If they'll take initiative and stick together, with everyone accepting his share of responsibility, Decatur decided to quit asking for help from outside, decided to develop to the full its own resources. Of course, TVA was there with tools of opportunity. It helped mightily in Decatur's getting back on its feet. But it was the people's own plan that came into being. For as Gordon Clapp, head of TVA, put it to me when I ran into him there...
Here in Decatur, for example, they followed no special pattern. They devised their own. They devised their own approach. Overriding everything else was a desire to make the kind of a community they wanted to live in.
But Decatur could never have done it without teamwork all up and down the valley. Listen again to Barrett Shelton.
What's happening in the Tennessee Valley is the story of what's needed in the whole world. For we are not talking of concentrating all the progress in one community. Rather, are we concerned with an entire area. No community can have or should have all the fat. Sound growth is not based upon any such concept. For one community to succeed, all must succeed. That's how we see the future in the Tennessee Valley.
This strong American story of how Decatur, Alabama, the city that refused to die, worked out its own salvation and helped its whole region as well, is a story that has implications for every part of our country. For some comments on its national meaning, let's call upon a distinguished representative of the 20th Century Fund, the research foundation that is collaborating with NBC in producing these programs. He is Mr. David E. Lilienthal, former chairman of the Tennessee Valley Authority and now a business consultant in Washington, D.C. Mr. Lilienthal is a trustee of the 20th Century Fund. As it happens, Mr. Lilienthal left just last week on a flying trip around the world, principally to Pakistan, India, and Japan. But before leaving, he talked with NBC's Jack Roney in Washington.
Mr. Lilienthal, what do you regard as the chief meaning of the Decatur story we have heard today?
Well, I'd say, Mr. Roney, the Decatur is certainly an object lesson in what a community can do when it looks not for outside salvation, but takes stock of its own resources.
But at first, some of the people seemed to think that since the government was coming into the region with the development of TVA, that the government should set the patterns and supply all the answers.
Well, TVA believed just the opposite. What TVA did try to provide, as the Decatur story indicates, was tools of opportunity for businessmen, for farmers, for citizens in general.
Those tools of opportunity TVA provided were such major long-range objectives as agricultural methods, navigation, flood control, and the generation of hydroelectric power.
Yes, that's right. Things that obviously no single community could provide for itself.
Mr. Lilienthal, I recall that when you were chairman of the TVA, you found that countries all over the world were interested in the methods of this American development and sent thousands of visitors here to look it over. Does that interest continue today?
Actually, it seems to grow greater with the years. For example, take my present journey to Southeast Asia, to Pakistan, and to India. This trip, I'm going as a private citizen, this trip is in part a result of river valley and regional development undertakings in those countries, developments and plans in Asia that have been influenced by an American idea, the TVA idea.
Do you think that the problems of regional development faced by the people of Pakistan and India are in any way similar to those of our own country?
In many ways, Mr. Roney, they're very different indeed. but in many other ways they are basically the same, and for a rather simple reason. Everywhere, such economic development has got to start with and be based upon people and upon the resources those people have to draw upon. It's the needs and capabilities of the people in any particular community or region that are the beginning point. So whether the development is in India or Pakistan or in Scotland or in the valley of the River Rhone in France, where I visited such developments last spring, they must build on the resources that are there, just as the people of Decatur in the Tennessee Valley did.
Are there further opportunities for river development and river valley development here in America?
Oh, yes, Mr. Roney, great ones. The 20th Century Fund study of America's needs and resources pointed to such possibilities in the Great Lakes St. Lawrence region, in the Ohio Valley, in the Connecticut and Merrimack Valleys, in New England, in the Missouri Valley, in California, in the Pacific Northwest.
Now, those very names open up exciting prospects. Do you think that such developments would have to be delayed because of our rearmament program?
Well, some undoubtedly would. But I think the rearmament program might cause some of these developments to be speeded up rather than retarded. On the St. Lawrence, for example.
Those prospects do seem to open up great possibilities for future growth of our country's resources.
Yes, they can add not only to our material wealth and military strength, but they can contribute something even more valuable by showing us what we can accomplish as a free people. They can add to the ultimate source of all of our strength, our faith in ourselves, our faith in each other, our faith in democracy.
Thank you, David Lilienthal.
Living 1951 in conjunction with the 20th Century Fund has presented another in our special series, The People Act. If you wish to receive a copy of today's script or to ask questions pertaining to the possible application of the Decatur story to your own community, you're invited to write to the 20th Century Fund, 330 West 42nd Street, New York 18. The fund will be glad to send you a script or put you in touch with an agency that may help you in your situation. Join us again next week when our field reporter will introduce us to some people who put democracy to work in Haddon Township, New Jersey. The People Act is transcribed for NBC and the 20th Century Fund by the Program Unit for Living 1951. Wade Arnold, executive producer. Edward King, director. Lou Hazem, writer. Elmore McKee, field reporter. Ben Grauer, narrator. And William Schwartau, recording engineer.
Your Hit Parade and Grand Ole Opry bring musical good times tonight on NBC.